produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Thursday, April 3rd, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Remember, marijuana isn't going to re-legalize itself. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Just join up with the talented activists of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at norml.org. And in this election year, one of the most important things you can do to fight adult marijuana prohibition is to make your voice heard by registering and voting in the election. You can learn more about that at Normal's special election website, smokethevote.org. Check it out. Now, today is Cannabis in the Law Day here at the Stash, and coming up after the news, we speak with attorney Adam Wolf of the ACLU's Drug Law Reform Project. He just argued a case before the Alaska Supreme Court that questions the Raven v. State decision that over 30 years ago declared that the personal possession and use of cannabis at home is protected under the privacy rights outlined in the Alaska Constitution. Then, Cannabis Carry brings us a great token tune from a Pacific Northwest band called Ivy League. How do you get Ivy League when your band members are from Seattle and Provo? Well, anyway, they've got a great song called Let It Burn that will play for your musical marijuana enjoyment. And to conclude our show, we speak with Rob Corey, an attorney in Denver, Colorado, who is representing a Fort Collins couple that plans to sell medical marijuana from their holistic medicine center. We've got a lot to cover, so sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Omaha mom accused of teaching girl to smoke pot gets felony trial. Omaha, Nebraska. A 4-year-old girl, being questioned about alleged child abuse, volunteered the information that her mother and her mother's boyfriend had taught her to smoke marijuana. Omaha police officer Sarah Spitzeri testified in Douglas County Court on Wednesday that the girl began talking about, quote, smoking joints with her mother, Lisa Skukard, 25, and Christopher Gladden, 23, during an interview on February 13th. The 4-year-old told the Project Harmony worker that Skukard and Gladden smoke joints, quote, and that she also smokes joints, Spitzeri said. She described that she also smokes from a bong, end quote. Spitzeri, who observed the interview, asked the interviewer to take a break so that they could decide how to make sure that the little girl was not just talking about watching her mother smoke marijuana. When the interview resumed, the girl said, quote, that she breathes the smoke in and breathes it out and then coughs, Spitzeri said. Then she said, everybody would laugh, end quote. The girl also demonstrated how to use a bong by cupping her hand in a circle and, quote, tilting the bong toward her while lighting it, Spitzeri said. Spitzeri's testimony came during a preliminary hearing on whether Skukard should stand trial on a charge of felony child abuse. Skukard faces up to 5 years in prison if convicted. Doug Johnson, Skukard's public defender, asks Spitzeri if she was aware that the child had tested negative for marijuana. Spitzeri said she had been told of the test results. Johnson argued that smoking marijuana in front of children, while not smart, is not a crime, and that a more appropriate charge would be misdemeanor child abuse. Judge John Huber disagreed and referenced Skukard's case to the Douglas County District Court, where she will face the felony charge. He also kept Skukard's bail amount at $25,000. She must pay 10%, or $2,500, to be released from jail. Now, there's so much wrong with this story, which I first brought to you back in February. While everyone focuses on the mom who allegedly taught her 4-year-old how to smoke pot, not much is made of the fact that the Child Protective Services were called because the girl showed signs of physical abuse, a bruise to her cheek and bruises on her backside and upper thighs. The boyfriend, Gladden, pleaded guilty to 4 misdemeanor child abuse counts for hitting her with a belt and slamming a door into her cheek. But the boyfriend only got 6 months, because he immediately pleaded guilty to the misdemeanors. The mom held out, since she says she never hit her kids. In the meantime, the child tells the bong-smoking story, so now the mom is facing a felony count in 5 years. The boyfriend can't be tried for that, because it would amount to double jeopardy. Also lost in the noise is the police report that says the kids had easy access to the guns that were in the house. Now there should be where the felony child abuse case should be made. The gun could kill the kid. The marijuana could not. Furthermore, the child tested negative for marijuana metabolites, and we all know how long those stay in the system. Can the state even prove that the child smoked marijuana? Or is it possible the child saw marijuana smoking and is just imitating it, like children do? Regardless, even if the child did smoke marijuana, it's not a crime that should be punished more severely than beating the kid with a belt and hitting the kid with a door. I can understand a felony charge for giving the kid cocaine, heroin, or meth, because any dosage of those could kill the kid. But no dosage of marijuana will kill the kid, and it would take heavy repeated doses, the kind that would show up on a metabolite screen, to inflict any serious damage. I don't at all advocate allowing anyone under age 18 to smoke marijuana without strong medical need and supervision, but I place allegedly making the 4-year-old smoke marijuana as somewhat worse than letting her drink sugary caffeinated sodas and fat-laden drive-through meals, but somewhat better than letting her smoke cigarettes and drink alcohol. United Kingdom's Prime Minister at odds with experts panel on cannabis reclassification. Gordon Brown, Prime Minister of the UK, is facing a dilemma over whether to overrule his own panel of experts and increase the penalties for being caught in possession of cannabis. The Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs is understood to have decided at a private meeting that it will not recommend tightening the law on the drug. The decision presents a potential embarrassment for the Prime Minister, who earlier this week said that he regarded cannabis use as not just illegal, but also unacceptable. It is understood that 20 out of the 23 experts on the panel decided on Wednesday that there was not sufficient new scientific evidence to justify a change. If Mr. Brown decides to press ahead with reclassification, he will risk becoming only the 2nd Prime Minister to overrule the Council, which is a statutory non-departmental public body dating back to 1971. The government reclassified cannabis as a Class C substance, dropping the penalty for possession from 5 years to 2 years in jail, in 2004. Since then, it has reviewed the decision twice, in 2005 and 2008. Conservative leader David Cameron said, quote, "There are all sorts of cannabis on the streets today. Skunk and super skunk are incredibly powerful and can lead people to having all sorts of mental health problems," end quote. The mental health charity Rethink, which gave evidence to the committee, said Mr. Brown should heed the committee's advice. Paul Corey, a spokesman, said, quote, "Gordon Brown should put aside his personal views on cannabis and accept the fact that it does not make sense to reclassify. Use of the drug has gone down since it was downgraded in 2004, and research by Rethink shows that only 3% of users would consider stopping on the grounds of illegality," end quote. The committee is understood to have concluded there was no need to reclassify after new research found no evidence that rising cannabis use in the 1970s, 1980s, and early 1990s had led to increases in schizophrenia. This is despite many reports pointing to a link between super-strength skunk cannabis, which accounts for 80% of street cannabis, and mental illnesses such as schizophrenia and psychosis. Well, the Prime Minister and the Conservatives are completely in the grips of reefer madness. The media in the UK flood the airwaves and the newsstands with scare stories of the dreaded super skunk causing violent psychosis and schizophrenia. Stories that would have made American 20th century prohibitionists Harry J. Anslinger and William Randolph Hearst proud. The reason that 20 of the 23 experts on Brown's Committee on Misuse of Drugs recommend against upgrading cannabis to a higher class of dangerous drugs is because they pay attention to the science, not the lurid British tabloids that want to peddle reefer madness stories to sell copy and to suck up to the Conservative government. Now, next Wednesday, I'll discuss this story with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who has all the science on these reports of super skunk in the UK. Meanwhile, if there are any token Tories, Sinsamilia subjects, or bong-hitting Britons who want to weigh in on the cannabis culture across the pond and the crazy reefer madness in the media, please email me at stash@normal.org.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
A look into the mind of a narcotics officer. Now, Normal's Paul Armentano wrote a nice opinion piece in the Vallejo, California Times-Herald. They had written a piece on the new record of 1 in 99.1 Americans in prison. The first reply he got back in the comments section claims to be from a narcotics officer. It provides a great illustration of someone in the deepest throes of drug war addiction. And for the sake of my listener's sanity, I'll read it as if it weren't completely filled with misspellings and bad grammar.
Let me give you a narcotic supervisor idea. First, no money, aid, nothing from the U.S. to countries who allow drug manufacturing. No U.S. travel for its citizens to these countries. No tourists. Any country who wants our money and help must allow our military narcotics officers into its country to stop the manufacturing of drugs if they cannot do it. This also means stopping the manufacture of drugs in Afghanistan instead of allowing it because it's the country's main product. Next, in the U.S., stop wasting money on telling the kids no to drugs. As you can see, it just does not work. Next, for any of those manufacturers who sell drugs, first offense, 10 years. Second offense, life. Third offense, life without parole. Now, this is for a larger quantity. Lastly, for juvenile selling, we set up a school prison where they go to high school and have no one to sell drugs to. Next, no drugs in prison, and any guard, attorney, etc. who's caught bringing it in gets 25 years with no time off. Think about this. Drugs are brought into this country with no problem, yet we think small weapons of mass destruction cannot come in easily? How about spending the time, money, and energy to sniff out drugs that we have on stopping the terrorists? I could go on, but there are a lot of businesses in America that do not want drugs to go away because it is an American big business like oil. Bob from Logan, Illinois.
Well, first of all, no aid or tourism to any country that manufactures drugs? Well, since marijuana grows wild everywhere, does that mean we don't get to travel anywhere? And then you want to use our military to invade countries that can't wipe out a weed? Do we even have that much military? Then, you want to go from 10 years to life with no parole for drug offenses. Well, if you think 1 in 99.1 Americans in prison was something, if this gets enacted, it would be about 1 in 10. Harsher penalties do not equal less drug use. It's not like someone who's about to smoke a joint thinks, well, it's okay, I'll only go to prison for a year. What? They raised it to 10 years? Well, then no more weed for me. 1 year would be okay, but 10 years is ridiculous. No, that's not how it works. And finally, no drugs in prison? Well, excuse me while I get up the floor from laughing. That's already the rule. And lawyers, guards, etc., who get caught bringing them in, already face hard time. And the idea about this prison school for druggy juveniles? Hey, what a splendid idea. Prisons have worked so well to keep adults off of drugs that we should extend that model to our children in school. When you read these comments from the prohibitionists that are just so full of such reefer madness, it's not hard to understand why we're stuck in the mess we're in.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
Well, one of the states that we always look to when we're talking about marijuana regulation and privacy is the great state of Alaska, which in its constitution has a very strong protections for privacy. And this has been ruled to give Alaskans the right to possess and use small amounts of cannabis in their home. To speak more about this, I'm talking now with attorney Adam Wolf, who's with the ACLU's Drug Law Reform Project. He just recently argued in front of the Alaska Supreme Court regarding a challenge to those privacy statutes that were set up in Raven v. State. And Adam, thank you for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Now, Alaska has always been the state that we look to as being the least criminalized state with your privacy protections. Tell our listeners, how does that work in the Alaska Constitution? Why can't they criminalize marijuana in Alaska?
33 years ago, the Supreme Court of Alaska interpreted the privacy clause of the state constitution. And it held, in essence, that the state cannot breach the sanctity of the home unless it has a really good reason for doing so. It then applied that standard to a statute that criminalized adult possession of marijuana in small amounts for personal use in the home. And it held that the state just simply did not have a good enough justification for breaching the home because, in essence, marijuana was not all that harmful. So, in doing so, the Alaska Supreme Court struck down the statute that criminalized adult possession of small amounts of marijuana in the home, even while the state could regulate adult possession of marijuana in public.
Now, this was 33 years ago, but wasn't there a time in the 90s where Alaska actually did recriminalize marijuana?
It did, and pursuant to that Alaska Supreme Court decision 33 years ago, the Raven v. State opinion, the Alaska Courts of Appeals struck down that law that recriminalized marijuana.
And that was Governor Frank Murkowski who was behind that attempt, correct?
That's right. And then Governor Murkowski was at it again in 2006 when he proposed a bill that was subsequently enacted into law that reenacted the very same statute. That is, that reenacted the same statute that was struck down in the Court of Appeals, reenacted the very same statute that was struck down in Raven v. State. And the very next day, the day after this became law, the ACLU of Alaska and two individuals suing anonymously challenged that law in the Alaska state court system.
So they're just bringing forth the same exact thing that's already been ruled against. They must feel that they have some sort of new argument or new angle that would make the courts change their mind. Is that their idea?
Yes and no. I mean, they agree that the privacy clause of the state constitution is meaningful, and that the state can't enter one's home unless it has a really good reason for doing so. What they've said now is different, is that marijuana is not your father's marijuana.
Oh, yes.
That this has changed considerably. You know, it's sort of a reefer madness type argument.
Yeah, we've heard that so many times. So you just recently argued the case, and tell us about how the arguments went, and how were the justices receptive to the ACLU's case here?
You know, I think they were. They want to, anytime the state argues that it has a legitimate interest in regulating for health and safety, the court will always take that seriously, and we agree that they should. But we also want the court to look seriously at the evidence here. And what we recognize is that to the extent that marijuana has changed in terms of its public health ramifications, what we know now is that it's actually less harmful than what we had thought then. And so one person who summed this up quite nicely, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, a professor at Harvard, and he testified in the Raven case 33 years ago, and his testimony 33 years ago is that marijuana is relatively innocuous. And his testimony in our case today is marijuana is even more innocuous than it was then.
Also, with regard to this this marijuana possession in Alaska, what are the exact limits that are considered personal possession?
The Alaska legislature defined those limits in 1982, and it set a personal use limit of 4 ounces.
Okay, so 4 ounces. And does that extend to cultivation of marijuana at all?
Well, it's for personal possession of marijuana.
So it doesn't really say anything about whether or not people are legal to grow the marijuana then?
Well, it's explicitly been defined as possession and use.
Okay.
You know, let me say perhaps a couple of things about this. There are a range of things that the government can legitimately regulate, and that range can be divided into two categories, things it can regulate anywhere, that is public and private. But then it also, you know, but also things that the government, and this is the second prong, has an undeniable interest in regulating, but its interest just does not outweigh the interest of privacy in the home and the serious intrusion of the state entering one's home. And that's a well-established principle, right? And it's not just about marijuana. One could say the same thing about cigarettes or about possession of obscene materials, things that the government might say that has a legitimate interest in regulating. But that interest, to the extent that it has one, just simply does not overwhelm the significant interest that you or I or anybody in this country has in ensuring that the state stays out of their kitchen cupboards.
Now, how does the Alaskan Constitution then differ from the United States Constitution with regards to privacy? Why do we not have this explicit a privacy right, federally speaking?
Well, I think you sort of just answered it with your question, which is that there is not such an explicit right to privacy in the U.S. Constitution, and to the extent that there is a right to privacy, which there is, it just has not been given such a robust interpretation that the Alaska Supreme Court has properly accorded it. That is, that the right to privacy in Alaska has some real bite, is really meaningful, and Alaskans take it as a real affront to their privacy rights when the state is permitted to enter their home.
I always wonder if there was any way that anyone could bring a suit to challenge one's privacy right in federal court to marijuana. Has that ever happened, or is there any plans to do something like that?
You know, I'm not aware of this having been done on the federal level, nor am I aware of plans to do that immediately. You know, I think what would make sense is to, you know, let's make sure that the Alaska Supreme Court comes out on our side in this case. And take that one step at a time. The Alaska courts have zealously regarded individuals' right to privacy. That's something that they take quite seriously, and we're confident that we're going to win this case.
Well, we definitely think we'll win this case as well. We're rooting for you down here in the lower 48. Thank you so much, Adam Wolf from the ACLU's Drug Law Reform Project, who's joined us here, who argued in front of the Supreme Court case there in Alaska that seeks to interpret the right to privacy with regards to cannabis. We'll keep up on the news, and once there's a firm decision, we'll get that posted on our blog at stash.normal.org. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. All right, Stashers, time for another musical break. Today's musical hit is a fun, upbeat number from Ivy League with their happy-go-lucky song, Let It Burn. This five-piece group calls the Northwest home, having their roots in Seattle and Provo, Utah. Their sound has the energy of Sublime and the lyrical qualities of Weezer. With powerful vocals, it's just good old party music. Ivy League has played the Warped Tour dates, as well as Utah's famed Big Ass Show. You can check their MySpace page to sample and purchase their CD. For more information on the artist, check out our link at music.podshow.com. You can download the song from our website at stash.normal.org. This is Ivy League with their song, Let It Burn.
Busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
All right, as I mentioned yesterday on the normal daily audio stash when the hemp headlines, I talked about a Fort Collins, Colorado couple who were going to be selling medical marijuana out of their alternative medicine center. And I'm joined now by Rob Corey, who's a criminal defense attorney with the Normal Legal Committee, speaking to us from Denver, Colorado. And welcome to the show, Rob.
Good to be here.
Now, I understand you are representing the couple that was named in this story, James and Pam Fleming of Fort Collins, who are opening the Inner Chi Healing Center and say that they will be selling medical marijuana there. How is this possible under the Colorado Amendment 20?
Well, Colorado Amendment 20 allows for caregivers to provide medicine to medical marijuana patients who have been diagnosed with debilitating medical conditions. So that's what the Flemings are doing. That's what the voters of the state of Colorado wanted. They wanted people who are sick and dying and suffering to be able to get the medicine that doctors tell them they need and that works for them. And we understand that not every patient has the knowledge, ability, and energy to create and produce their own medicine. So they've got to, in most cases, rely on others to do it for them, just like with any other synthetic prescription medication. Nobody manufactures their own aspirin or other pills, so we get them from other people.
I see. And according to the story that I had read in the paper, it had mentioned how that the marijuana users, the authorized patients, would have to list Inner Chi as their caregiver, and so the clinic then becomes their caregiver.
Well, they've got to list a person as their caregiver, so they'll list one of the Flemings as their caregivers, because the healing center itself cannot be legally a caregiver, but somebody who works with the healing center can be. So that's what they'll be doing.
And Colorado's law has no limit on how many people you can be a caregiver for?
That's correct. The health department had previously imposed a limitation of 5 patients per caregiver, and we had to go to court, and I represented a patient who went to court to get that limit thrown out, because that 5 patient limit was based on zero science and really had no basis whatsoever. And interestingly enough, it was suggested, quote, in quotation, suggested to the state health department by the federal government. The federal DEA told them that they should do a 5 patient limit, and so they immediately complied. And when they did so, they violated the law. And so we got that thrown out. And thank God there's no limit to the amount of patients that people can help now.
Now, there's as I was reading the Amendment 20 language, it seemed kind of interesting. I was trying to find something in there that would mention specifically about how the sales were regulated or how caregivers were regulated. I did find one passage that said no person is entitled to protections from the section for the sale of marijuana for any use other than medical use. Is this a situation where by just not mentioning it, they're making it legal? Looking for something that would be a specific, you know, dispensary regulation or something that said specifically that caregivers could sell marijuana to their patients.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yes, there is no prohibition in the law against being compensated for medicine. I think everybody, including the voters of Colorado, understood that it costs time and money to grow marijuana. Power bills if you're doing it indoors, time and effort indoors or outdoors, water either way, nutrients, and knowledge and expertise, that's worth something. And from the patient's perspective, the medicine has value. It has great value for many people. I mean, for thousands of people in Colorado, this is the only thing that works for them, for their debilitating medical conditions. So it's also a lot cheaper than the synthetic prescription drugs are for many people in many situations. And it doesn't have the negative side effects and the tolerance levels and the constipation that pills can create and just all the negative things that pills create. For many people, medical marijuana doesn't have that.
Yeah, it's just interesting as I call people from the different medical marijuana states to see how each state handles this in a different way. I'm a member of Oregon Normal, and we work up here with the Oregon law that specifically states that there can be no remuneration other than for supplies and utilities. So, yeah, it's always a different sort of situation. And the way I was seeing this one is it just says, you know, you can't sell marijuana for anything other than medical use, which seems to say that you can sell it for medical use.
Right. Certainly.
Well, that's a,
you know, and I think it's unfortunate if people are not compensated. I mean, I'm an attorney. I get compensated for what I do. I've got a family to support. And just because I'm getting compensated doesn't mean that I'm doing anything wrong or improper. I mean, people need jobs, and a lot of people, being a caregiver for many patients is their job. And people should be compensated for doing their job and doing it well. And that's, you know, that's the system we live in, the economic system that people, especially running businesses that do a good job and succeed, ought to make a profit. They ought to be rewarded for that.
Now, are there any other co-ops or caregivers in that are operating in this sort of manner, sort of publicly announcing that they're selling medical marijuana, or is this usually handled more on a down-low kind of private basis between two consenting adults?
Well, different caregivers have different approaches, and I've seen the full range, and some caregivers are very open and publicize it and get publicity for it, and other caregivers have decided not to do that, and you know, it's up to the patients and up to the caregivers as to what degree of publicity or openness they're going to have, and their advantages and disadvantages to both approaches.
Okay. Now, from the experiences that we've seen in California, there's been a lot of federal attention down there with the DEA busting the dispensaries. And we've also seen the prices down there at the dispensaries approximating what we'd find out on the black market. Do you have any concerns about that happening in Colorado as far as getting federal attention or seeing prices of the marijuana escalate?
Well, in terms of the price of medical marijuana being comparable to what you would find on the street for marijuana, my understanding is that the medical marijuana is of a higher quality level, it's of a higher potency, and so it's of a greater quality than the kind you would buy out on the street. So to hear that it's the same price as what you buy on the street really means that the medical marijuana is probably a lower price by weight and by potency. Mm. Because what you're getting is worth more.
Gotcha.
So, you know, that's not a real concern for me, given my attitude that people should be compensated for things that have value. And secondly, you know, of course we're concerned about federal attention and involvement. The federal government in Colorado has, up to this point, shown a great deal of restraint in persecuting patients and caregivers, and we hope that continues. We're not seeing it in California. We see lots of raids and lots of problems there from the federal level, and that's an issue that's just going to have to play itself out. We're hoping that in Colorado it continues, at least as far as the federal government's non-involvement. But eventually I think Congress is going to have to solve this problem. You know, we live in a country where this is the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. The people of this state, Colorado, have spoken very clearly that they want medical marijuana to be legalized. They want patients who are suffering out there, who are dying and they're sick and they're in pain, they should be able to get their medicine. And the federal government works for us. You know, we pay our taxes, and the federal government is supposed to serve us, the people of Colorado, not the other way around, where we don't exist to serve the government. So I'm hoping that the federal government will continue to believe that it's got better things to do in this age of global terror, you know, prosecute patients and caregivers for supplying medicine to people.
Well, I completely agree with all those sentiments. We need to get this overturned at the congressional level, and maybe with Barney Frank's bills coming up here with states' rights to medical marijuana and the Make Room for Serious Criminals Act, we can see some positive change here. Maybe it'll have to take until after the next election, but we're always fighting for that end of adult marijuana prohibition, and especially for the people who need it for medical purposes. I want to thank Rob Corey, who's a criminal defense attorney in Denver, Colorado, also a member of the Normal Legal Committee, for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash, and thanks for clearing up that Colorado law for us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
Leave you today with the cannabis quote from Milton Friedman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist. Quote, legalizing drugs would simultaneously reduce the amount of crime and raise the quality of law enforcement. Can you conceive of any other measure that would accomplish so much to promote law and order? End quote. We also must remember that Milton Friedman signed on to the Myron study that said that the regulation and taxation of marijuana, similar to that of alcohol and tobacco, would reap $14 billion in law enforcement costs and tax revenues. It's time to just re-legalize it. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow for more Daily Audio Stash. Until then, take care of each other, tokers.